So, Barry, it looks like it's just the two of us.
Yes. Kyle's had a new child in the family, and just to show how progressive our podcast is, we do give paternity leaves. So he's away for a while. I don't think we're quite up to, I read the other day that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, is going to be taking a two-month paternity leave.
2 months.
When his baby comes. We're not going to quite give Kyle that, but a couple of weeks off. And so today, I guess, we're effectively 3GT minus one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's for a worthy cause.
That's right.
But, well, you know what's funny is actually the Family Leave Act, good old President Clinton, you can take up to 12 weeks off.
Wow.
And there's actually a guy at my previous post office who would look forward to having children just for that reason, because he would take 12 weeks off.
Well, hopefully Kyle doesn't listen to this podcast before we get him back on.
So is he vacationing then as well?
I think he's probably staying local. I don't think he's off anywhere, but I guess we'll find out.
Not camping or anything.
I hope he isn't taking his poor wife out camping in November with a new baby.
All right, so I want to know what your email habits are, Barry. Are you the kind of guy who sits down a specific time each day, opens it up, or are you the check it every hour kind of guy?
Well, I think there are those two different approaches. The folks on the one hand who are just constantly checking their email along with all the other forms of communication. Mm-hmm. And then I know some people are very disciplined. They have a certain time frame each day where they check their email. I know there's even some programs out there that where you've self-programmed it in that you can only access your email at a certain point each day. Just to
hold yourself accountable.
Yeah, which I see some wisdom in that.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I fall in the middle. I tend to, if I'm in my office and it's a regular work type day, there are just certain times per day that I check email. Of course, in my teaching schedule, I'm caught up in meetings and with students and faculty, or of course in the classroom. And so I would have on those particular days a certain time I would work at my email. If it's more of a study day where I'm in heavy preparation for sermons or talks or lectures, those types of things, or writing project, I find that I probably check my email every hour or so, maybe every hour or two, just more as a mental study break, sometimes getting away from the heavy concentration and doing something a little bit more easy on the mind. It helps me to feel like I'm accomplishing something, and then go back and hit the books. So that's my general pattern.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because until recently, I was extremely old school with Microsoft Office Outlook. But here recently I had to move and I lost my beloved. I actually could have my name. You know, it was like Austin C. Brown at Comcast.net.
Right.
I mean, you know, I actually had it because I was so early, but I've lost it, which is fine, I guess, because I finally upgraded to Gmail, which is a wonderful thing, you know, checking in on my phone and all that. But I was very much, I'd get home, sit down at my computer, check my email, and that was just my ritual. Pretty much that, and then right before bed, I would look at it. But I'm happy to say I've kind of joined the 21st century with the Gmail stuff.
Well, that was the same with me. I was on Outlook for a long time. I began to have troubles with it. And I was even more old school up until a couple of years ago. I still had a Juno account. And then what even makes it worse is I was paying for it.
Which is crazy. I mean, I forgot that you even had to pay for that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, a while back. And
do you remember how much it was? Like,
I don't even want to say that publicly. I feel like a bad steward of my resources. I think at one point toward the end, it was like $4.95 a month or something. And I got ridiculed enough that I finally... I just didn't want the hassle of trying to switch over. I didn't realize it wasn't that hard or difficult to do, but back then it just seemed like taking all those files and organization that I had on Outlook and trying to get that over to Gmail. I couldn't see how it was going to work, but it ended up being more painless than I originally thought.
All right, so you're sitting down, checking your email, and I want to know what your view is about email etiquette. Because I have some questions in this area, and I have my own formulations in my mind of what is an appropriate time frame for not responding to an email. All right, so let me just ask you, what, how often did you try to respond to emails?
You say how often?
Yeah, how often? I mean, you get an email, let's say it's not urgent, like, you know, an emergency kind of thing, but in your mind, you're sitting there, you get an email. What is your time frame for, I have X amount of time before I'm starting to feel
Oh, how
guilty?
long? How long? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if it's possible, I like to answer the day I receive them. I will allow up to a day go by, but I start feeling pretty guilty if I haven't answered it within a 24-hour period. So if I get one on a Tuesday, if I haven't answered it by Wednesday, I feel badly.
The conscience starts getting to you.
Yeah.
Now, I happen to share that. I'm pretty much a like a 24-hour window is kind of it. And anything beyond that, I really just for myself, I start to see it as procrastination or just being lazy or whatever. So I try to do it, but not everyone shares that. And I think there should be like some kind of international rule book on email etiquette that really nails this down to 24 hours. I think that's appropriate.
Well, that's part of the reason we didn't have Kyle on this one. Because we know
Right.
the average would go way up if we were talking about Kyle answering emails, but
If he were here, I would love to know.
I'm sure he'll want to do a rewind on this one
I'm
once he
sure he'll
listens
want to say, but
to protect
he'll
his kidney.
probably Okay, well let's take bets, and he's got to be honest. What would you say he would say, Barry, is an appropriate amount of time? And we'll say each of us will give our answer, and see if who's closer. What do you think he will say is an appropriate amount of time?
We're supposed to judge people by their fruits, so I'd say like a week.
Well, I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say he. I know he's gonna want to nuance this to death and give us all these careful diagrams and everything for why he takes so long. But I'm gonna say 3 days.
Okay, well, we'll see
Three
what he says.
days. But yeah. But
I
yeah.
do have evidence, though, I can produce.
Well, and that's the thing when people tell me, oh, I'm sorry, I was too busy. I roll my eyes a little bit and say, well, too busy to write just two sentences? I don't know. I don't know. It just feels a little lame-o to me. A little lame-o. I gotta say a little lame-o.
Well, and addressing the subject, we were thinking about calling this Taming the Email Beast, and I don't know, there's really no taming it. It's more of a quest, I think, a quest to conquer it. And it is difficult because I do hit periods of time where situations arise and I'm real busy and I can't get to my emails like I normally would. But usually if I haven't answered within the day or so, and I have a correspondence catch-up day, I usually preface my response to someone that way, that I've been busy doing this for the last couple of days and I'm catching up cor on correspondence. Sorry for the delay, and then lead in. But I did, in looking at this, I Googled email etiquette, and there's actually,
Is there?
oh yeah, there's some web pages,
Really?
and they say on there that 24 to 48 hours is an appropriate time. Now,
Okay,
I don't
now,
know by what authority they speak,
yes.
I saw it more than one place.
That seems right. 48 by 48 hours, I'm starting to kind of tap my watch. There's no doubt about it. It just kind of I start tapping my watch or kind of wondering, but I'm also wondering, do you, I have a, sometimes a social anxiety with sending emails. I'll type up something, getting ready to send it out, and we'll call this like the, you're on the edge of the precipice of the send. And this fear, I have this fear sometimes, I'm getting ready to click the button, and it's like, oh, is it right? Is what I said correct? You know, for example, I remember sending in query letters to literary agents, and I was so paranoid that I misspelled their name, or the first sentence had a grammatical error, something like that. So I'd be sitting there, all right, Sid, we're going to do it, we did it. And then invariably, you know, about 1 out of 10 times, I'd go back and there wouldn't be a mistake. So I don't know, do you ever have that fear, that anxiety?
Oh, yeah, the old hovering finger fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, obviously, the more important the subject, the more you sense that, where if you're getting ready to send a letter that's important in nature to someone, or I know in like writing papers or committee work, something that you've put a lot of thought into, you want to be careful before you send. I often will have, it's kind of funny, just yesterday we were getting ready to send out an invitation to some people. And it's here at our home and involves Miriam. And she asked me if I sent it. I said, sure. Yeah, I did. And she said, well, I didn't get it. And I said, well, I know I put your name on it. And maybe it just hasn't come through. But I checked a little bit later and I realized I had left it up and I hadn't sent it because I wanted Miriam to proof it before I sent it, which is kind of a pattern I have with detail things where I'm real prone to leaving out an important detail that she would catch, or if it's something where I'm trying to communicate to someone's heart, I always like to have Miriam listen to that and give me some feedback.
Yep. Well, that's segueing into what I wanted to kind of pick your mind on. And that is, maybe you've seen this. I know I have firsthand. Instances in church life where there's an important email sent. Maybe it's an email that's confronting someone. Maybe it has an accusation or an exhortation or something, you know, something along those lines. And it was done either so poorly or even just somewhat poorly that it leads... Well, I've actually seen near church splits over some things. I've seen broken relationships. I've seen certainly hurt feelings and misunderstanding. Is this something that you've also seen in your life?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah, sadly.
So what I want us to talk about is how should a person approach this? How should a person think about their emails? Because, okay, I'll just be blunt. I think there's a fair number of people out here who need to slow down and not send these things out, right?
Right.
Like, put the brakes on and maybe pause. And so what I want to do, what I've done, is I've put together, I jotted down 7 bullets.
Okay.
7 things that I want, and this is true for me, because I'm not coming at this as the, you know, the saint that can be framed as the great example, because the truth of the matter is I don't know how many times... probably half a dozen times or more in my life, I've sent out emails that I should not have sent out, that are just misguided emails. And so this is coming from a man who's tripped and fallen many times over this. And so these are the things that I've kind of thought about and trying to do self-correction and also just trying to forge a way forward. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to list the bullets and then just bounce them off you and you tell me what you think, okay?
Okay.
All right. So let's see here. So the first one, first bullet, we need to take our time. And I think it may not be a hard and fast rule, but for me, it's especially if I'm frustrated or angry. You know, there's the Bible passage, don't let the sun go down on your anger. But maybe if it's just frustration, I think we should sleep on it. I think let a day go by before you hit the send button. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. I think that's a very important thing to... Scriptures do say to be quick to hear, but slow to speak and slow to anger. And I too have witnessed where and participated at times where you can fire off something and you can't get it back once you do hit that send button. And I think it's very
The
important.
precipice.
Yeah, so I think we really need to be careful before we send. We think about the Lord will, judge every idle word. And if we're sending out harsh words or that's where sometimes not answering right away and maybe using that 24 to 48 hour window period is important, because I think oftentimes you get a chance to cool down and be more reasoned, even see if you need to respond to something. So yeah, I definitely
Yeah, I think.
think being careful on delicate issues, where tempers have been. I know I've received emails where people are just mad at me for something I've done, something I failed to do. And it's just so easy to get in a self-defense posture
Oh
and
yeah.
to just
Oh
take some
yeah.
time to.
And just yeah, a little hot in the collar, and you fire back, and it creates a it yeah. There's a domino. I've seen the domino effect. It is real.
Right.
So, bullet number two, we need to, I think, err on the side of speaking to people face to face. And you know what? Let me just flip to this. I thought this is an interesting passage. It's in 3 John. It's at the very end. And John says this. He says, "I have much to write you, but I do not want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we will talk face to face." Now, obviously, it isn't a hard and fast rule like you always must speak face to face. I'm not saying that, but there seems to be an intrinsic wisdom to, if it's serious, it's more than likely worth the effort to actually go sit down with the person and talk face to face. What say you?
Yeah, it's another one I think is really important. I think I even saw that in the secular email etiquette. It said,
Oh, really?
if things start getting heated, just quit writing and pick up the phone or something. So even
Yeah.
the world recognizes that. Especially, we're talking about, especially if there's some sense of conflict between you and the person that you're receiving an email from. I almost believe it's a biblical mandate that we've got to go to them. Matthew 18 says, verse 15, if your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. And I think that really speaks to this digital age we live in. It's just so easy to communicate anymore that it's, and to sit there and type out a quick email or even more, sending out a text, it's just this instantaneous, immediate communication form. That has its place and it has its benefits, but when it comes to dealing with people's hearts, and particularly when there are obstacles and conflicts and hurts and pains between people, there's just no doubt that the Bible would mandate that we go and look at that person, because it's when you're face to face that you can see facial expressions, countenance, the person can hear your tone. I think it's much more difficult to
Well, and I
pierce
think it deep.
someone, well, to pierce, at someone's heart when you're looking at them.
Exactly.
And it slows you down, right? Because you've got to make a time to meet with them. You've got to give up some of your own time. You've got to schedule it. So there's just a lot of ways in which going to someone slows you down and creates, I think, more godly communication.
I can personally testify that it de-escalates, that it also, when I'm actually sitting in the room, one person on one chair and another and the person in the other, I feel more affection for them at that moment. And it just makes it so much easier to work through these things. And so, face to face, I think is an important one. I think another one, this is bullet three. I think we gotta. I think a tone is very important. We have to. I think we have to think hard about our tone. And this one's admittedly challenging. You can't capture how maybe you're saying it unless you're just a very gifted writer. Maybe like a C.S. Lewis can pull this off. But I think for most of us, I think extra time needs to be spent thinking about how it could be, how it could come across. And I don't know if that requires more smiley faces at the end of sentences or what. Maybe that's good for our culture. But
well, they did just announce this past week that the word of the year is an emoji. It's not really a word. It's the
just a picture.
Yeah, just the little icon of the smiley face with the tears coming out of. I guess that's the most popular one used in the world. And they were talking about how emojis are, quote, picture words that transcend languages because, you know, you can be in different languages and understand that symbol. So,
yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So maybe we meet, but, you know, it won't work. But let's put a caveat here, right? It won't work to say, I think you're a pile of trash, smiley face.
No, that's not. That's not it. And I think it also would depend on the person to whom you're speaking. So if it's a close friend, you know, maybe some smiley faces work. But if it's a business letter or
maybe
I think you should avoid that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the fourth bullet, I think you did allude to this already. You know, love covers over a multitude of sins. I think the question should be asked, should this even be addressed? I mean, can I just overlook this? Is this something that we can just have love cover over and just let it go? I would say probably at least half the time, it's the right thing to not say anything.
Yeah, and again, especially via email, if you're being, you know, if I receive a correction or even a critique over the email, and whether I really agree with it or not, I just find just take it on the chin. We've got to have thick skin as Christians and just accept it and thank them for it. And if, again, if there's value in it, receive it and act upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people, especially in the church, I know when I was a pastor, you know, they'd say things and maybe I just don't agree with them because they're not seeing things the way the leadership is. Or And so you just, again, you thank them, but you might not necessarily always have to respond right away to it because you're not living, you don't want to live in the fear mm-hmm. of man. If it's something of a serious nature, though, and you know that a lack of response on your part, not just an email, thank you, but they really expect change or action, then again, that's where I would respond back, well, we probably need to get together and talk about this.
Yep.
But as you're saying, a lot of the smaller things, I think we need to just let our love cover it. And love covering it doesn't necessarily always mean that I'm completely passive and I just act like it doesn't affect
me.
Well,
sure.
Love can be expressed and it's covering over it. So I can thank them and show some appreciation for what they've done.
Yep. All right. So the fifth bullet is, this is a very important one, is do I have all the necessary information? So many times, and I don't know how many times do you see this in life where people speak into issues where no, you don't have all the relevant facts, and therefore it's skewing your perspective. So, and I think the same is true with emails, is there sometimes something's going on in someone's life that it would be extremely important to know about. Even let's say they're in the wrong. Let's say they've done something that's just wrong. Well, maybe their marriage is rocky, or maybe they're going through something with their kids, that it would help your approach if you just even knew about that, right?
Right. And this is where, you know, email is a form of communication, and communication is just such a vital skill, even art, to learn, and how to express things in such a way that you're winning people's hearts and encouraging them in a right direction. So a lot of times, as you're saying, people are responding because they don't understand certain things. And especially in the church at times, we have to be careful in discussing people or an issue in the church or maybe confidentiality that needs to be protected. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of misunderstandings happen in the church because a certain group of people are working with a situation that some others don't know all the details about. And I think it's very important how to speak, sometimes almost in a veiled way, where you're saying, well, there's just some things about this that you don't realize, and trying to gently help them understand that they don't have the full picture. can be really important. And you have to be careful again and email how you do that, because once it goes out, it can get spread, which is, you know, another important part of this whole thing. I teach my children, and I've had to remind myself over and over again that when I send this, it's potentially not only going to this person, but it could effectively go to anyone in the world that has access to email. And, and I've seen that happen. You know, unintentionally be sent to someone else. So we just have to be careful.
No doubt. Number six is, oh, and this is such a big one for me. I got to tell you, I can't tell you how many times my wife has saved me from foolishness. And that is just have your spouse look at it.
Yep. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah. I mean, even just little things that I'll be like, oh, I'm going to send this. And she'll say, no. Or you desperately need to change that sentence. What are you thinking?
Right. Yeah, Miriam helps me a great deal. She is a grammar Nazi, so if I've got my adverbs wrong or anything, she helps pick those out. But I think it's also important, even if you don't have a spouse, like a lot of times my children will ask me, Dad, does this sound okay? Send me an email before they send it to a teacher, a friend, an employer, that type of thing. I think that's very important for young people to learn, is to have that accountability and that check on their communication.
Yeah, that's extremely wise. Yeah, that's great that your kids would do that.
Well, it's not, you know, it's only sometimes.
Yeah. No, but that speaks well of them. That's great. Number seven, and this is a tricky one. I'm going to call it consider the apostolic witness. And what I mean by this is we have in our hands the Word of God, which a significant portion of it, in terms of the New Testament, is these letters, these didactic letters. They're personal letters, like Paul to Timothy or Paul to the Philippians or Paul to whomever. And we have in here a model of how the apostles dealt with problems. I mean, that is a lot of what the New Testament is even doing. I mean, you cannot read Galatians and not see, oh, there is a serious problem here. And it's a theological problem. So what gets Paul fired up? What are issues that will get him fired up and send off a letter with strong language? Or take like the letter to the Hebrews. It's a letter of exhortation. If you have people on the verge of apostasy, real apostasy, what might that look like? Or something like the Thessalonians, newer believers. Paul, in that letter, will speak to them, I was like a nursing mother to you. And I'm like a father, you know, exhorting you. It's very warm. It's full of a lot of praise and encouragement. Same with Philippians, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is something that I'm trying to work on, and I think the saints ought to think about, is how did the apostles deal with problems?
Right. Yeah, I think that's, you know, we've used a few of the commands in the scriptures and, you know, the command from James to be slow to speak and slow to anger, but seeing the life that they're modeling as they're dealing pastorally with the church, we can also learn through them by examples. Somewhat similar to the conversation we had a couple of podcasts ago about sermons, we can go to the Bible and look at the commands about preaching, and we learn one thing, but we can also go and just look at sermons and learn how the apostles communicated biblical truth.
Or like with prayers, right?
Or prayers.
Yeah, so that would work too.
Same here. So we should emulate them. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that this takes us back to is what you brought up in one of the earlier bullet points is, I still think all in all, that's the beauty of the church, is that it should be a place where good, healthy communication is taking place. And there are places and times to use email and the other digital forms that we have at our disposal. I would put texting maybe a little lower than that on the seriousness chain, and Facebook messaging or something like that. So the email is important, but Face to face is just vital in the
Yeah,
church, to
it
be able
is.
to go and look someone in the eye and speak. But I
Yeah.
think also one thing you're pointing out here is, and in between maybe both of those, is handwritten letters
Yep.
or cards.
Yep.
Those
They
are
carry more weight, don't
they
they?
carry more weight, and we need to make sure our mailmen carry some weight around so they can keep their job. So
That's right.
I know you appreciate the handwritten letters.
Oh yeah. Christmas is coming,
That's
right?
right.
Yeah. Well, and actually, along those lines, is there was actually a situation at not Sycamore, it was my previous church, where there was this godly woman who came up, and I was the worship leader, and we were playing some music before the service began. That I can't remember if it was too loud or too rambunctious or whatever. And she came up, and she was really hot. I mean, she was really mad. Pointed her finger out right in my face. Pointed her finger at me. It's like, you need to turn that down, or I can't remember, turn it off, or whatever it was. I was like, man, that's really out of character. And I was gonna write her an email and kind of talk to her about it. And my wife said, I think you should go talk to her face to face. I said, well, okay, you're right. I need to do that. So I'll handwrite her a letter asking that, you know what? Hey, I think we really ought to just get together and talk about this. Just a little bit. You know, I care about you. Let's do that. So I wrote her a handwritten letter, and she was happy to get together. And I can tell you that the end result, you know, who knows how it would have turned out doing it the email way.
Right.
But a handwritten letter that led to face to face, it was a sweet time, and we totally smoothed things over, and actually both of us understood each other better at the end. It was really good. So that is one testimony to the handwritten letter and face to face. So
Well, that's
yeah.
good. Well,
Yeah.
and of course, as an RP, I have to ask, did you listen to her? Did you just turn that music off?
Yeah. I can't. I think I did pull the finger across the throat to the sound man. Like, kill that thing, man. Kill it. Oh, man. Yeah. So here they are, the seven bullets. We need to take time, be slow to speak, err on the side of face to face, think hard about your tone. Maybe love should cover over a multitude of sins. Do we have all the necessary information? Have our spouses look at it, and just consider how the apostles dealt with problem and emulate. I mean, Christ, or well, not only Christ, but Paul would say, "Imitate me as I imitate Christ." Well, actually, we can imitate Paul in some de to some degree with even how he wrote, and I think we can do that. So, as we come to a close, I just want to share. Let me just throw out a couple, and maybe you have one, but a few passages out of the Proverbs that I think if maybe people could append these up on their computers to just remind them before they email, you know, pastors or just any other Christians, before you confront or anything, just keep these things in mind, all right? Here's the first one. Proverbs 15:1 says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." We certainly say that around here at our house with myself and the kids and different things, but
It's
and
like
then in Proverbs,
it goes
oh, go
along
ahead.
with the one soft answer breaks a bone. It's just amazing how you can take a very volatile situation and speak quietly and softly, and God's word's true.
And Proverbs 15:28 says, "The heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil."
Right. Another
That's really good.
promotion of that hovering finger.
Yep. And then 16:24, "Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones." There are three that I try to remind myself of, and maybe that'll be good for someone else. You know, God's word cuts and divides, and maybe it'll soften and make you have a more gentle answer in an email.
Amen.